there, but the cast of mind, again, a liberty in a world of market imperatives. The Philippines has, for the past quarter century, stayed very much within the purview of American capitalist interests.
As ideas are shared, there was another analysis, not by this Proyect fellow, again, using the comparison to the Manila uprising and the People Power, and saying this is a cautionary tale about what will happen next in Egypt. And the U.S. role will have a lot to say on what will happen next if we insist on the neoliberal Washington consensus. The real issues, the labor strikes and all that, will be shuffled away. Anyway, that's a good introduction for the Labor Hour. We're already a minute over, so thanks.
Thanks
opinions
a lot.
Are those of the speakers. David Green in the house, Paul Muth. Opinions are those of the speakers. Not necessarily shared. You can write newsfromneptune@gmail.com.
That's right.
Hello, folks. Welcome to the February 26, 2011 edition of the Illinois World Labor Hour, brought to you over the air by WEFT, 90.1 FM radio in Champaign, Illinois, and webcast worldwide live at WFT.org. The views and opinions expressed in this hour programming those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of WFT's management or board of directors or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Now here's Tom to acknowledge some of our underwriters.
This hour of programming is being brought to you by the listeners of WEFT and by the Brotherhood of the Maintenance Way. The Brotherhood of the Maintenance Way employees are proud to continue their support for the Illinois World Labor Hour. A democratic union, the BMWE, celebrates the voice of labor on WEFT. It is our hope that all workers may share the same benefits that they enjoy, such as living wages, job security, away-from-home expense pay, early retirement, Canadian-style health insurance, and guaranteed year-round work. And the Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by you, the listeners of WEFT, and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom. I'm your host, David Johnson, here today with co-host Bob Pelesny, Jason Kozlowski, and guest John Fitton, as well as Tom Thomas, who will have some workers' interest news for us later in the show, the Labor Hour Culture Corner. Tom's poem for this week from his Live for Something or Die for Nothing collection of radio poems is entitled Stop Being Victims. Also here to, we're here now with Tom to kick off the edition of Workers' Interest News.
This from the Associated Press. The fight over labor rights that has spread across the country had reached the boiling point in Wisconsin when Governor Scott Walker proposed a bill that would end virtually all collective bargaining rights for state workers. With a cautious eye on Wisconsin, Republican leaders in several other states are toning down their tough talk against public employee unions and in some cases abandoning anti-union measures altogether. Indiana's governor urged GOP lawmakers to give up on a right-to-work bill for fear that the backlash could derail the rest of his agenda. In Ohio, senators planning on softening a bill that would have banned all collective bargaining by state workers. In Michigan, the Republican governor has indicated he would rather negotiate with public employees than become involved in a fight he likely would lose in the long run. However, the states where the pot is boiling are hardly enough to get labor leaders celebrating quite yet. They are still facing a lot of measures in dozens of states that are seeking to destroy union rights, although union officials are saying that they believe the sustained protest in Wisconsin, Ohio, and Indiana, and a few other states are making an impact. According to Naomi Walker, Director of State Government Relations for the AFL-CIO, it's still too early to tell, but I think the reaction that we're seeing from governors in other states really shows the power of workers standing together.
Story mainly locally here in Champaign, Illinois, connected to the ongoing protests in Wisconsin. With the ongoing crisis in Wisconsin, solidarity efforts around the country and here in Champaign have quickly increased. Area unions have banded together to act locally, regionally, and nationally, contributing far more than financial support to their working sisters and brothers protesting in Wisconsin and occupying the state capitol building en masse. The Graduate Employees Organization Local 6300, to which I proudly belong, has initiated a 24/7 solidarity vigil with broad-based campus and community events that started Monday. Highlights have included solidarity pickets with SEIU Local 73 at the University of Illinois and their fight for a fair contract with the university, a talk by Dr. Jim Barrett, professor of history at the University of Illinois on labor and working class history. On Thursday, the first picket of the day was a counter picket against the Tea Party demonstration outside of a hotel in Urbana where the state legislators from Indiana have taken up residence in their effort to block anti-union and anti-public education bills being considered in the state. The entire Indianapolis press corps was there with satellite trucks to document the fact that there are more supporters of working people of the working people of Indiana than there are Tea Party protesters. At noon Friday, Monica Bielski-Boris of the Labor Education Program gave a talk public unions movements, leading to a discussion about the development and protest moment of the public sector unions. At 1:30 following that, Indiana Representative Clyde Kersey left the hotel where the Democratic caucus is staying to address a crowd of about 50 people at the Y. He provided detail about the struggle in Indiana and was asked how long will we be out. Senator Kersey had said, as long as it takes. I have actually been involved in a film series here at the local YMCA. It's been in the evening. It'll be during the day, maybe next week, and at various points. I'll give you a place where this can be updated. We showed the movie Matewan on Tuesday evening and The Battle of Chile on Thursday evening, and we'll be showing other labor working class oriented films. And there are solidarity efforts from here where there will be a local protest in solidarity with Wisconsin workers, but also contingents have gone up to Madison and will go to Springfield as part of protests today. And if you want to help contribute at the YMCA, they are collecting needed materials for workers in Wisconsin and protesters, such as socks, toothpaste and toothbrushes, water, large garbage bags, and bedrolls. And any financial support you can give would be greatly appreciated. Stay tuned for further details about this, and you can go to the show's blog at www.illinoisworldlaborhour.wordpress.com for more updates. Bob?
Excellent, Jason. Actually, I'm going to read a story that you posted on that blog here earlier this week because I think it's worth getting out there. It's Wisconsin public sector workers are undercompensated compared to the private sector. After extensively analyzing wage and benefit data, the progressive think tank Economic Policy Institute finds that Wisconsin public sector workers are undercompensated in wages and benefits when compared to their private sector counterparts. Categorizing the wage and benefit packages of workers by educational levels, attaining high school, bachelor's, master's, doctoral, and professional degrees, Jeffrey H. Keefe contends that across the board, workers in the private sector make more than those in the public sector. As the level of education increases, so does the disparity between private sector and public sector compensation. Keefe says, on an annual basis, full-time state and local government employees in Wisconsin are undercompensated by 8.2% compared with otherwise similar private sector workers. This compensation disadvantage is smaller, but still significant when hours worked are factored in. That's because full-time public employees work fewer annual hours, particularly employees with bachelor's, master's, and professional degrees, because many are teachers or university professors. When local government employees are undercompensated, when comparisons are made controlling for the difference in annual hours worked, full-time state and local government employees are undercompensated by 4.8% compared with otherwise similar private sector workers. And these findings come as Wisconsin Governor Walker and state Republican legislators claim that the state needs to get public sector wages and benefits in line with those in the private sector. If that were the case, according to this EPI report, Wisconsin's public employees would appear entitled to pay and benefit increases.
Oh, that's good to know. Good story, Bob. And Jason, for wanting to read that and everything. It's great. This is from Iraq Veterans Against the War. Iraq Veterans Against the War calls on all U.S. military service members to refuse and resist any mobilization against workers organizing to protect their basic rights. The Iraqi Veterans Against the War stands in solidarity with the multitude gathered in Madison, Wisconsin, and many other cities to defend their unions. We believe military service members are public employees, too. It is dishonorable to suggest that military personnel should be deployed against teachers, healthcare providers, firefighters, police officers, and other government employees, many of whom themselves are serving the National Guard. Madison, Wisconsin is ground zero for a fight that will likely define the relationship between public sector unions and the governments that employ them for decades to come. Similar to the federal government's defeat of the 1980 Professional Air Traffic Controllers Organization strike, which signaled the beginning of a 30-year decline of real wages, benefits, and union membership for private sector workers. What happens in Madison today is likely to affect whether governments across the country can destroy a decent standard of living for public sector workers in the future. Governor Scott Walker recently stated that he was preparing the National Guard to respond to labor unrest following the introduction of union-busting legislation in Chicago. Governor Walker has attempted to justify this attack on collective bargaining by pointing to state budget shortfalls. Missing from this explanation is acknowledgement that these deficits have been created and exaggerated by the ongoing trillion-dollar wars and occupations in Iraq and Afghanistan. Meanwhile, federal and local governments across the U.S. are cutting back on the public sector. Troops have been called out in the past against workers' strikes, campus protests, and urban uprisings. However, recent events in Egypt and numerous examples from U.S. history have shown that service members have the power to side with the people and refuse to use violence against their fellow citizens. Troops activated for duty in Madison, Wisconsin will have to decide if public sector workers are really the enemy. Iraq Veterans Against the War says they are not, and that troops should support workers fighting for decent jobs, wages, and benefits. And if you are a service member facing mobilization or know someone in the military who is, you can contact the Iraqi Veterans Against the War via email at ivaw@ivaw.org or by phone at 646-723-0989. That's 646-723-0989, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Minimal voter turnouts are not unusual in one-party primary elections in odd-numbered years, but last Tuesday's numbers were the lowest in 45 elections during the last 20 years. According to Champaign County records, a similar election in 2009 produced a comparable turnout when only 209 of the 8,927 registered voters, which amounted to only 2.3% of voters, cast their ballots during the city council primary election in Champaign's District 1. County records are indicating now that last Tuesday's voter turnout during the Democratic primary election was the lowest in any Twin City election, at least since 1989, and probably as far back as 1968, both in percentages of registered voters and the total number of ballots cast. Only 53 ballots were cast during the City Council primary election in Urbana's Ward 2 last Tuesday. That amounts to only 2% of the 2,636 registered voters in that ward. That was the smallest tally in available county records, which include all elections since 1990 and most elections since 1968. No votes at all were cast in the Cunningham 2 precinct, which is one of four precincts in Ward 2 and is largely populated by University of Illinois students. Champaign County Clerk Gordy Holton said of the zero vote tally that he had never seen that before. After the corruption and theft of so many elections nationwide since 1980 by Bushite Republicans, are people just not voting because they feel their ballots are not even being counted? What other plausible reason could there be?
Well, it could be the Democrats aren't coming through with what they promised. I think that's a lot of reason people are staying home. Because that's
one of the main reasons.
Yeah. Okay. Any more news stories?
I got a story here from Business Insider. It says America's corporate tax rate is 35%, but 115 companies on the S&P 500 pay less than 20% in taxes, according to the study by Capital IQ in the New York Times. That's not even counting 37 companies like Citigroup and AIG that received more in tax credits than they paid. All of this thanks to loopholes in the immensely complicated tax code. So these people here track down data from Capital IQ to identify large corporations that pay less than 5% in taxes. And we'll look at like the top five is Plum Creek Timber Company. They made $1.3 billion and they had a tax rate of 1.62%. Western Digital Corporation, again, made $2.5 billion and had a tax rate of 1.6%. HCP made $614 million and a tax rate of 1.4%. Carnival Cruise Line made $11 billion and had a tax rate of 1.12%.
Wow.
And the Range Resource Corporation made $1.2 billion and had a tax rate of 0.53%.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Okay, Jason?
I just had a brief comment and follow up on that, that it's just amazing that this era, given even the anti-union pro-business era that started with Reagan, really stands alone in the amount of giveaways for business that this, and this is a great story that Bob brings up, that Citizens for Tax Justice did a similar study in the beginning after the effects of the two rounds of tax breaks for businesses from 2001 to 2003. Over 80 major corporations for one, two, or all 3 years between 2001 and 2003 received these similar tax refunds. And these are major international businesses and major multinational corporations to the tune of $250 billion. Imagine what this would do for our treasury with this caterwauling about deficits and the subsequent blowback and attack on working people. I mean, It's just unbelievable.
Indeed. Okay, we're going to a little bit Workers Independent News. We'll be right back.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, thinking he was speaking to billionaire campaign contributor David Koch, seemed excited when Koch told him he would show Walker a good time in California after he had smashed Wisconsin's public employee unions. A caller from the Buffalo Beast newspaper punked Governor Walker, posing as the right-wing billionaire and recording their conversation.
Well, I'll tell you what, Scott. Once you crush these bastards, I'll fly out to Cali and really show you a good time.
All right, that would be outstanding.
Walker also told Koch he had thought about planting some troublemakers within the pro-union protesters' ranks in Madison. Walker, still thinking he was talking to Koch, compared himself to Ronald Reagan when Reagan smashed the Patco Union just after taking office. Walker believes it was a defining moment for Reagan's political career. Walker seemed to have Reagan fantasies for himself with the effort to bust Wisconsin public unions. And it just may define Walker's political career, although perhaps not in the way that Walker would like. Walker talked about tricking the Democratic state senators into coming back to the Capitol to talk with him in his office so Republicans could use a technicality to go ahead and vote to end collective bargaining. Walker and the fake David Koch had a good chuckle together when Koch suggested Walker bring a baseball bat to his meeting with Democratic senators.
Bring a baseball bat. That's what I
do. I have one in my office. You'll be happy with that.
Worker resistance and the Democratic Party walking out of the legislature has forced withdrawal of anti-union legislation in Indiana, at least temporarily, and Indiana's Deputy Attorney General has been fired for tweeting that live ammunition ought to be used against pro-working family protesters in Wisconsin. The Teamsters rolled into Madison yesterday. Jesse Russell reports.
The 10th day of protests in Wisconsin saw two Teamsters rigs roll into Madison. Those rigs were joined by Teamsters President James P. Hoffa. When correspondent Joanne Powers interviewed Hoffa and asked him about the possibility of calling a general strike if the proposals are pushed through.
Well, I think we have to look at all the tactics, you know. You know, he's playing hardball with the lives of people here. This is not about the budget of Wisconsin because the workers said if there are adjustments in our pension and health and welfare, we're willing to sit down and talk about that, but we don't want to give up our collective bargaining agreement. And he said no.
Hoffa commented on the call made to Walker where the caller was pretending to be billionaire David Koch.
He's threatening to, you know, basically hold back the checks of the people who have left the state, the brave senators, you know, who have slowed this process down so we can demonstrate and turn public opinion. So there's nothing he won't do, and we've got to be flexible on what our response is. But if he lays off 5,000 people, that's an act of war.
OPEIU President Michael Goodwin is throwing his union behind the Madison protest as well with a rally on Friday.
We're not going to be shut up, and we're going to fight back, and we're going to win this battle.
Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent News.
Okay, we're back, and you can hear, Doug Cunningham is on Tom Hartman. Every Monday you can stream at tomhartman.com to get some more details. And in the meantime, we're going to the Cultural Corner. We're expecting some callers to call in. We've got John Ryman, of the National Executive Board member of the National IWW, calling in at half past the hour, and Jermaine Light is in Springfield at Springfield, Illinois today with a big public sector union rally at the state capitol. It's going on in all 50 states, and she's going to be calling in at 10 till to give us an update. So with no further ado, we are going to Tom Thomas with his latest poem from his book, Live for Something or Die for Nothing, Stop Being Victims.
There was an old man by the road pushing a borrowed shopping cart. He had rags wrapped around his feet and loneliness deep in his heart. Loneliness for a roof above and heat inside four walls around. Loneliness for a real bed instead of sleeping on the ground. The tattered clothes that he had on were not enough to keep him warm, especially when the winter winds brought on the cold with all its harm. Till recently he had a life that he could not afford to keep. The power bills he had to pay just made the cost of life too steep. The dragon capital felled him and totally ruined his life, for he had lost his family, his kids, and a once loving wife. His savings were vacuumed away by the pigs who need even more, and the billions that they've stolen are only a foot in the door. Why should we have to spend our days afraid of the dark every night? Why can't we socialize power? That would bring an end to our plight. Then every one of us would pay only for the power we use and not be paying some CEO to take his yacht out for a cruise. For no more raises in your rates, call your Congress people today. Say you don't want a shopping cart to have to be your home someday. Stop Being Victims was written at the Poets Loft in Champaign, Illinois on February 27, 2008 and was brought to you live today, February 26, 2011, here on the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, community radio for East Central Illinois.
Very excellent, Tom. Excellent. Very excellent. Okay, tune in on Sunday and every Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m. on Comcast Channel 6, Urbana Public Television, for Labor's Worldview TV with host Jim Iman and yours truly. And this Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m. is special guest Carrie Pimblot from the Graduate Employees Union, who's going to be on talking about her experiences up in Madison, Wisconsin last Saturday. And also we'll have some very good film footage from the events that happened last Saturday in Madison, Wisconsin. So tune in. Labor's Worldview, Comcast Channel 6, 4 to 5 p.m. this Sunday and every Sunday. Also, today, 3 p.m. at the Comfort Inn on North Lincoln Avenue in Urbana. Come out and support the Democratic Indiana legislators who are given sanctuary here in Champaign, Urbana. There's going to be a support rally for them at 3 o'clock, so please turn out and show your support. There's going to be teachers and other public sector workers coming all the way from Indiana to also participate in this.
Good morning, Dave. All this upsets me about the conspiracy of these governors doing these working people. It's just amazing. What happened to all that trickle down?
Yeah, economy? And this is John Fitton, by the way.
Good book
Brother
on...
Laborer.
Yes, indeed.
Good
I
book on...
in the last couple
yeah,
days.
Me and Bill's out in about 2 foot of mud dealing with it.
That was like a little mud to bring solidarity.
It was a job.
And bonding on the job.
It's a job getting the washing machine to get about 2 inches of mud off of you. Okay. Good book on labor, what happened to labor, is a book by Thomas Gigan called What Side Are You On? He's a labor lawyer during the Appalachian strikes, went to South Chicago when steel went down, and I can remember the what he said was the only thing working people really have the ship come in is they end up with a pension and to pay something.
Oh, yes.
When these Tea Party governors that are after the working people, they always bring up the Reagan thing and the union busting and the airlines and stuff. Tip O'Neill once said, "If we were, if we had Republican salaries, we could be Republicans too." Remember the Olive North and the drug dealing and the thing.
Oh,
and
I ran Contra.
In
yes,
the congressional hearings, they asked Ronald Reagan if anybody told him about this stuff, and he says, "I don't think anybody did." Well, who was in charge? O'Neill said he was the Tip O'Neill said about Ronald Reagan, he was the most knowledgeable person about any one subject that he ever knew.
Okay, we got a call. We got a caller calling. I got to go to the call line here. Okay, hold on.
Tip O'Neill was Speaker of the House during the Reagan administration.
Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah.
Hi, David. This is John Ryman calling.
Hi, John. Yes, listeners, John. This is John Ryman. He's from the General Executive Board member of the International Industrial Workers of the World, the IWW, calling from Oakland, California. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks. I'm also an expelled member of the Carpenters Union.
Oh, yes. We can't forget that for that Wildcat strike back in the summer of 99 against the Carpenters Union instead of the employers. But anyway, yes, John. So tell me, you've been, of course, following these events that have been going on in Madison, in which the IWW has been playing an interesting role. Could you talk a little about that today?
Well, I've been trying to follow them and talk with some of the people there as much as I can, and of course it's a big disadvantage not being there. But from everything that I can gather, you know, one thing I would just preface my remarks by saying that lots of times, you know, worker activists, we tend sometimes not to look that closely at the divisions within the capitalist class, amongst the employers themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, we really have to look at that very closely. And from everything that I can gather of what's happening in Wisconsin, I think that it indicates and it shows an important shift that's going on within the capitalist class and their methods of rule. And it's exactly shifts like that that tend to generate a wider movement from below. And I think what's happened is, you know, you've had this wing of the employers, of the capitalist class, that's become increasingly confident. You've got this wing that's represented by people like the Koch brothers and Mellon Scaife and so on, who think that we can go back to the period before, really, to 19th century, not even early 20th century, but 19th century labor relations. They think that you know, we can go back, that they can, all the advances that black people made, that women made, and so on, that we can wipe all of that off the books. Yeah. And another part of their thinking, I think, it, you know, that's, of course, it's we see that in that wing of the Republican Party. And another part of their thinking is, you know, up until now, the Republicans and the Democrats, they've had this great method of rule where when people get disgusted with one, with the Republicans, then they shift to the Democrats. And when people get disgusted with the Democrats, then corporate America puts the Republicans back in.
Good cop, bad cop little game being played there.
Right, exactly. But now what's happening, if you think about what they're trying to do in Wisconsin, a major way of funding for the Democratic Party has been the union, and in particular the public sector union. And so I think that what they're trying to do in Wisconsin is just more or less completely wipe out the Democratic Party.
Yes.
By wiping out the source of their funding.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, of course, the union leadership, which is kind of the lieutenants for the Democratic Party, they're absolutely horrified at this. And, of course, they're horrified at losing their potential dues money. And so that's generated, that's kind of really opening things up there. And also, from what I can gather, there's a whole, there's a layer, and we see it out here in California also, a layer of union activists who in some ways form the base of support for the union officialdom, but who have some of the traditions of the 1960s and 1970s. And they are now, I think, being pushed to the, to take a somewhat more militant stance. And so, from above, I wouldn't say that the old way of ruling is breaking up, but you can see little fissures, little cracks.
Mm-hmm.
And from down below, the old way of being ruled, again, it's not breaking up, but again, you can see little fissures. So it seems to me that what's happening in Wisconsin is not just one more struggle in a long line of struggles that we've seen going back to the Greyhound strike and so on, but it's the opening up of a new era of class relations here in the United States.
Well, John, do you think they might have possibly overstepped themselves in a way in the fact that because of these aggressive actions by the Governor Walker in Wisconsin in particular, that they've made people more emboldened, or cause they feel like now they've got their backs against the wall and that it's time to, they got to fight back?
Well, they've definitely done that,
mm-hmm.
but the problem is that Walker and the Republicans, I think, have painted themselves into a corner
mm-hmm.
where they cannot back down. If they do, number one, their own personal careers are ruined,
mm-hmm.
and number two, it would really embolden the working class in Wisconsin and beyond. So they can't back down. I think, just as far as the technicalities on the bill itself, as far as whether it passes or not, it kind of depends on these 14 Democrats maintaining a backbone.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at it from that point of view, I mean, the Democrats aren't exactly famous for a stiff backbone.
Yes, indeed. And the thing is, as far as that's concerned, there was that comment, I don't know if you heard, from the Assistant Attorney General of Indiana, who was, I guess he was recorded talking to Governor Walker in Wisconsin, advocating he used live ammunition on the protesters in Madison. You think that's part of basically an indication that they definitely painted themselves in the corner and they're getting kind of desperate, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, here you have Obama talking about how it's a shame that any government uses live ammunition against its people, talking about Gaddafi and Libya.
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking about doing the exact same thing here. But again, that's what I say. You have these people that think they can go back to the 19th century methods of dealing with class relations, the Gatling gun.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, that's going to be interesting what happens. Of course, this is spreading out to Ohio and Indiana. In fact, you may or may not know that you know, a bunch of Democratic legislators from Indiana fled the state to Illinois as well. But we're becoming quite a sanctuary. And in fact, Champaign-Urbana actually is hosting the Democrats from Indiana. And we've got them here in town, and there's going to be a big rally to support them today, and a bunch of people coming from Indiana as well. So
let them know they're welcome.
Yes, but there were some Tea Party demonstrators out there yesterday. I think there weren't very many of them. Jason, did you happen to be there at that rally?
I was not, but hi, I'm Jason Kozlowski. I belong to a local union here, and I'm co-host. The union to which I belong is GEO, is a graduate employees union, and the counter-protesters had far outnumbered the Tea Party people. I didn't see specific numbers, but I think it was well under 50.
And the Tea Party's message was for them to go home and do their duty and that kind of thing.
Right.
Yes.
I think with this, with these protests, and I think the stuff that you're providing in this commentary is great. I think that in addition to worrying the Democratic Party and officials over their bases and funding, I get the impression that some union people may be worried as well, in addition to the Democrats, because of this groundswell of support, and I think because it's providing these fissures and radicalizing some everyday people. That is, I'm not sure that some union officials really know what to do with how widespread, spontaneous, and massive some of these protests have become, and in part because I think they worry that if they end up losing because this has gotten so big, what this might end up meaning for them. That is, they're worried about the attention being drawn to the possibility of a loss rather than the possibility of winning this, and just how widespread the support for all of this has actually become.
Right. You know, there was that kind of partial resolution passed by the Labor Federation raising the issue of a general strike.
And that was in southern Wisconsin?
In Madison. And from what I understand, there's the beginning of discussion of forming strike committees in the different locals. And so the issue to me is, win, lose, or draw on this bill, no matter what happens with this bill in itself, we know that that corporate America is not going to stop the attack. Mm-hmm. Even if the bill is completely defeated and workers win a raise, which isn't going to happen, but even if that did happen, the very next day they'd be planning on how to counterattack.
Mm-hmm.
And if they win the entire bill, the very next day they'll be planning on how to go further. So, this particular struggle, of course, it's important, but it's not the be-all and end-all.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I think, has a potential huge importance is, from what I understand, the beginnings of discussion of formation of rank-and-file committees in the different locals of the establishment union.
Who's been
and the potential then for those committees to start to play the role of an organized opposition to the policies of the established leadership.
That's real interesting. And who's been doing a lot of this organizing, John, the rank-and-file?
From what I understand, the IWW has been playing a role way out of proportion to its actual numbers and resources.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't say this, just like as a proud member of the IWW or something, but in a situation like this, where there's such a huge, massive vacuum,
mm-hmm.
you will always find some group, that can step into that vacuum and play a role much greater than you would have normally expected.
Well, it seems like an interesting situation, like you and Jason both alluded to, is that the union leadership seems to be kind of, they're on unfamiliar turf. I mean, it's not the same old game anymore, you will.
I think, there's one other point that I think really, really has to be stressed.
Mm-hmm.
And, when we get caught up in a movement like this, we tend to really focus on the people around us, those who are already active.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to realize that those who are already active, maybe today in Madison, maybe you'll get 100,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's great. That's a huge number.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the population of Wisconsin? In fact, yes. What's the population of Madison?
Yeah, about 300,000, yes. Mm-hmm.
Some of the opinion polls in Wisconsin, they've been a bit conflicting. Like, I saw one poll, I think it was a Rasmussen poll, that showed that 48% of the Wisconsin residents supported the governor and 38% opposed him. Then there was another poll which was a little bit more nuanced, which broke things down. How many agree that public sector workers should take cuts, which at least a plurality agreed with that, but then at least a majority did not agree they should lose their union rights. But my point is that there is a large sector of the working class that doesn't clearly understand the issues involved here. And I know I've been involved in other struggles where you're fighting against concessions, and workers will come along and say, well, I've had to give that up. Why shouldn't they?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that another really important part of the struggle for activists should be to make a link with those sectors of the workforce that already don't have those benefits. And to go to them, like I was reading, one teacher said, like, that these concessions mean that I'll lose $1,200 a month in pay. To go to workers in the big box stores, in the supermarkets, secretaries, whoever, and with a leaflet, how would you like to lose $1,200 a month? And if these state workers lose that, that just means your wages will be driven down further. And not only that, but also that this struggle shows where the power is for you to be able to win what they've got, for you to be able to win full health benefits for yourself and your family, a decent pension plan, a minimum wage of at least $15 an hour. And you should be linking up with this, and we want our movement to link up with you for everybody to have these benefits.
Okay, John, this is Bill Gorrell. And one of the things that I have noticed on this, and I don't think it is a very good strategy at all, and that is where they're saying, well, really, we don't get that much compared to the private sector. The private sector gets more, which
right.
implies that, well, your union's maybe not doing so good for you, and that ties right in here where they're fighting just to keep collective bargaining and not
right.
to keep the benefits they have or expand on them. And then a third thing while I'm here is people are not defining these things correctly. It's like they're saying they want the workers to pay more for their pension as if what they're already paying into their pension is not deferred payment that perhaps if they didn't have the pension they could be getting right now in their paycheck.
Right. I agree with you completely. We shouldn't be at all apologetic about what we've got. And it shouldn't be, well, we don't get all that much, and so we shouldn't, it should be, we want what we've got, and we want more. And don't give us that lie that the money isn't out there. The corporations today in the United States are sitting on $2 trillion in cash and other, what they call liquid assets. And that amount of money is absolutely dwarfed by the wealth of the richest 1% in this country, the richest 1% of households, who has $20 trillion in wealth. So don't give us this lie that the money isn't there for us to all have a decent life, including full pensions, fully paid health care, and so on.
Glenn Ford addressed that this week.
From Black Agenda Report.
Black Agenda Report about how the country is broke. Stuff you keep hearing all the time from Obama on down, and that is just not the case. And we need to think of Willie Sutton here. You know,
the
why
bank
did
robber?
He, yes, why did he rob banks, you know?
Right.
Right, and you have the Koch brothers, each one of them worth, I believe, around $40 billion. All the people at Walmart, they should be seething when they hear that the Walton family are some of the top five richest people in the country. And well, speaking of language again, there's something I just thought of today, and that is I want to quit using the terms upper income and lower income. I want to start using the terms greater income and lesser income so as not to say that these people are above us.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But the main thing is, like I think we're all saying, is whatever the highest pay is for one sector of workers, we should use that to organize for all workers to fight for that and not be at all apologetic about it.
Yes, indeed.
It should be a positive example.
Yes.
Right. And so my point is, you know, there's now the beginnings of a campaign for a general strike in Wisconsin. And I think that's great. And I think to whatever extent we can organize local committees for that, that's also great. But we also have to link that up with a campaign, with a drive into the private sector, and in particular, the lowest paid sector, the non-union workers in the private sector, and say, here's what we're fighting for. We want to keep it and improve upon it, and we want you to have it too. And here's how you can fight for it and join with us and do so. Because otherwise, a general strike will at best only be partially effective.
Indeed.
And also, in that way then, we can start, basically we're fighting a defensive struggle here. And that way we can start to go from the defensive onto the offensive.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
The pay gap in this country, it's terrible, like 466 times or whatever. And
yeah.
The book Ralph Nader put out there in April, only the super rich can save us. He states in there that 450 people in this world have more wealth than 3 billion people. If you run
of course,
that
to Ralph Nader thinks that it's
people,
those super rich that are going to save us, which is, I mean, if talk about living in a dream world.
Yeah, indeed, because that's working against their best interests and all their wealth.
Right.
Well, John, thank you so much for calling in and stuff. And
Thank you, Dave.
Yeah, you got a regular blog, and how would someone access that to see some of your wonderful articles?
Well, if they go to IWW.org, mm-hmm. they can find my blog on there, on the members' blogs. And also, if you look at worldwidesocialist.net/blog, you can find a lot of stuff that I've written on there too, but maybe the best way is at IWW.org and look for members' blogs.
Okay, well, thanks again for calling in, John.
Okay, thanks very much, Dave.
Okay.
Thanks, John.
Take care.
Goodbye.
Seven summits, and I swam the seven seas, but the road I must travel, its end I cannot see. Well, I fought in the jungles, and I fought in the streets, but the road I must travel, its end I cannot see. Well, once I had a reason, don't know what it could be, and the road I must travel, its end I cannot see. Well, I sang to myself that I want to be free, but the road I must travel, its end I cannot see. I walked the empty desert and was burned in the heat, but the road I must travel, its end I cannot see. Well, I crossed the frozen wasteland, in the bitter cold did freeze, and the road I must travel, its end I cannot see. And I will knock on every door, for I do not have a key, and the road I must travel, its end I cannot see. Well, I sang to myself that I wanna be free, but the road I must travel, its end I cannot see. Shot a man in Soho, couldn't guess his age. I found his empty journal, I filled up every page. I called up my state senator, they said he wasn't there. The secretary took my name, and man, she sounded scared. So I counted my misfortunes, I added up the blame. I picked through all the garbage, I checked off all the names. I read in the newspaper, they questioned all my friends. They hoped that they could find my ass before I struck again. So I sang to myself that I wanna be free, but the road I must travel, its end I cannot see. And so when thirsty I will drink, and when hungry I will steal, but the road I must travel, its end I cannot see. And so tonight I walk in anger, with worn shoes on my feet, and the road I must travel, its end I cannot see. And I will sing to myself that I free, but the road I must travel, yes, it's end I cannot see. But it's too dark now to read.
Okay, that was Tom Morello from his Night Watchman CD, and that song was called The Road I Must Travel. And anyway, yes, there we go. I was just going to say we're waiting for another phone call here from Jermaine Light, and here we go. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, David Johnson, this is Jermaine Light reporting live from Springfield, Illinois at the state capitol.
Well, welcome back, Jermaine. Excellent. We had a lot of good feedback on your report last Saturday from Madison, Wisconsin. So tell us what's going on in Springfield.
Yeah, I think I was standing just a little too close to the rally here, so I'm backing off.
Okay.
I can hear your voice, but can you repeat that, please?
Yes, I was just saying you did an excellent report last Saturday from Madison, and we'd like to know what's going on in Springfield today.
All right. Yeah, well, there's some real big excitement down here. Looks like maybe, I'm very not good at estimating, but at least probably a good 1,000 people here right now. And the official rally is about to start, but we're already chanting.
Mm-hmm.
There's already somebody at the mic. And looks like a lot of enthusiasm. To continue our police saga, I did pass a policeman on the way down the sidewalk. And he was very enthusiastic. Yeah, we're supporting our brothers in Wisconsin, he said.
Oh, excellent, so, excellent.
Yeah.
Listen, a lot of people may wonder why there's a rally going on in the state capital of Illinois in Springfield, considering we have a Democratic Governor, Pat Quinn, who, although he's not been the greatest for working people, he's nowhere near as vicious and aggressive as the governors in Wisconsin, Indiana, and Ohio. So what's the purpose of the rally today?
Well, this is a rally today. It's a 50-state capital rally, and hopefully there is a rally in every capital in all 50 states today in support of not only Wisconsin workers, but also all workers across the country, and hey, why not the world?
Yeah, indeed.
And yes, it's one world, one pain.
Okay. And who's turned out mainly? I mean, this was organized by the Illinois Education Association Teachers Union, I believe.
Well, actually, no. It was organized by Move On.
Okay.
And they got in contact with IA through some IA staff that noticed the rally was happening. We had our board of directors meeting for IA this weekend in Springfield.
Uh-huh.
And so we just moved the meeting over here.
Okay.
To the Capitol.
Well, you know, Jermaine, I've got to share this quick story. You called me, I believe it was Wednesday or Thursday night, telling me that you're going to try to persuade the state president of IEA to have a rally in Springfield, you know, in the spirit of this call from Move On to have it in all 50 states. And I said, well, good luck. I don't know how successful you're going to be. And then you call me back 15, 20 minutes later saying that, you know, the state president, Ken Swanson from IEA, agreed to it.
Yes, well, in fact, a staff member had already tipped him off to it,
okay.
And they had already made the connection with the organizer of this rally. So, yeah, he had to shift around our agenda for our meeting to make sure we got out in time, but we did it.
What?
And we had to go late last night till 11 o'clock to finish up today at noon, but we're here.
Yes, indeed.
And we're all very excited, and we also know that we're also thinking about our Indiana brothers and sisters who are coming over from Indiana today. To rally and at the Comfort Inn
in their banner, yes.
In support of their very brave Democrats.
Yes, indeed. Yes, and
yes,
I think I just wanted to share that story just because it's amazing how fast things are moving these days. And I think it's just amazing that, you know, it's just this Governor Walker in Wisconsin and these other governors, I mean, they've went on the offensive against working people. And I'm just amazed at how, you know, working people are mobilizing, and even the union leadership that, of course, we, you know, have a fair share of criticism for past, you know, slow movement at the best, sometimes inactivity and stuff. But it's a whole new world, it seems like. And it seems like the workers are definitely starting to make a comeback against all the give-backs and push-downs that we've experienced the last 30 years.
Yes, you can feel it in the air. It's like electricity. Hey, I've got an IEA staff member standing right here beside me. His name is Mark Michaels, and he is a junior representative for IEA. He's the one that tipped Ken Swanson off to the Move On rally here.
Okay.
So I'm going to let him talk just for a sec.
Sure.
How's it doing? I'm also the former candidate for Mayor of Urbana back in 1996.
Okay.
What can I do for you?
Well, you're on the air. Can you just tell us a little bit what's going on there in Springfield today?
Well, I'm seeing people come from all different corners towards the Capitol right now. I'm actually very happy and amazed to see that we're getting a real crowd. We got a chanter up who's getting everybody to cheer and scream and warming up the crowd, and we're going to have about an hour of speeches as we stand here in the cold, all fighting for the needs and the rights of the middle class to organize and fight for a better life.
Well, that's great to hear, and I'm so glad to hear that this is really coming to fruition here, this 50-state mobilization and stuff. So thank you so much, brother, for turning out and your share of mobilizing the people to Springfield and everything.
You're welcome, and keep up the spirits. We're going to make this work.
Indeed.
Take care, brother.
Right.
Take care.
Solidarity.
Okay, Jermaine, thank you so much for calling in, and we're going to get you on the air here here real soon, okay, maybe in the next week or so. That is if there's not something else going on somewhere next Saturday.
I'm the traveling reporter for now, but
yes, indeed.
If we have a lag, I'll definitely come down to the studio.
Okay, well, Jermaine, thank you again so much. It's been a really wonderful hearing both your reports both today and last weekend, so we'll see you around in solidarity.
Well, we're defending workers' rights to organize, rights to collective bargaining, and all power to all the people.
Indeed. All right, take care.
Bye.
There is a war going on for your mind. Media mavens mount surgical strikes from trapper keeper collages and online magazine racks. Cover girl cutouts throw up pop-up ads infecting victims with silicone shrapnel. Worldwide passenger pistols deployed paratroopers, now it's raining pornography, lovers take shelter. Post-production debutantes pursue you in NASCAR chariots. They construct ransom letters from biblical passages and bleed mascara into the holy water supplies. There is a war going on for your mind. Industry insiders slaying test tube babies to corporate crackheads. They flash logos and blast ghettos. Their embroidered neckties say, stop snitching. Conscious rappers and whistleblowers get stitches made of acupuncture needles and marionette strings. There is a war going on for your mind. Professional wrestlers and vice presidents want you to believe them. The desert sky is their blue screen. They superimpose explosions. They shout at you. Pay no attention to the men behind the barbed curtain, nor the craters beneath the draped flags. Those hoods are there for your protection, and the meteors these days are the size of corpses. There is a war going on for your mind.
We are the insurgents.
Born in the flood, bloody finger paint sets, black marketed freshwater cannons, forget me not, epitaph, airbrush with death, white tees, white beaters, button up, reattach flesh.
In between the lines, outside of the law,
outside of the law,
underneath the veil,
underneath the veil,
our foundation,
we navigate the globe,
trying to find a pattern to break the mold,
to break
with
the mold,
family to feed,
nowhere we won't go,
nowhere we won't go.
Screams that he's seen a monster. There's bloodstains on his shirt. They say that he's gone berserk. Sometimes when I wanna shut out this world,